A. Security issues affecting internet transit points and backbone providers.
So, if anybody's confused, just let them know that it's going on up here. So, with that said, if everybody's not coming in from the outside, we can close the doors and start up. I know some people downstairs were waiting for this last session to get out because it ran over a little bit. So if you're waiting to go downstairs, head on down. Okay, thank you. Next up is Bats. Batsy, what do you go by? Bats or Batsy?
Bats, yeah.
Bats. Batsy's in his email address, but ignore that.
Somebody make this go. Okay.
Oh.
Am I good? Somebody make me go. There we go.
Can you hear me? Okay, it's all good.
This one off, too.
Okay, perfect. All right, how's everyone doing? I'm going to be the last presenter here, except for Bill, of course, who's doing the closing. I guess you're all sort of getting riled up to get back to the bar. So, I'm going to go through this. A lot of it, hopefully, anyway, I speak quickly, especially when I'm as nervous as I am in front of such a large crowd. So hopefully it'll get done fairly quickly, and we'll have a fairly interactive question period afterwards. Okay, I'd like to start... I'd like to start just a little bit my ideas about information security. This presentation is going to deal a lot with configuration issues with BGP, which is, of course, Border Gateway Protocol. And it's sort of the definitive source of writing information on the internet, which means that it is a critical facet of how the internet works. I think one of the things that I've found with... I'm not even going to get into that. Let's start with the presentation. All right, I'm going to be reading off slides for a little bit and then making commentary from there. Well, a lot of sites that I've dealt with, they believe that the only threats, of course, are from unsophisticated script kids or well-funded corporate espionage projects. You've got the slide in front of you. The problem is compounded by the underestimation of the former and the belief that their organization is not of interest to the latter. It's sort of a... I'm not sure if it's a false sense of security that people have. It's what it comes down to is the attitude of what do we have that these people could want. Okay, the reality is that the stakes are substantially raised if the company in question is publicly traded. Now, what I mean by this is that many organizations that are publicly traded, they contain, well, a great deal of sensitive information on their networks, and also their quality of service and what they provide to their customers is directly affects their stock price. If you are a backbone provider and you develop a bad reputation as far as delivering to your customers, it will affect your stock price and your investors will freak. So what this means is that the average attacker will have a vested interest in your stock price if they have an online trading account. So with this motive in mind, again, I'm going to examine some of these attacks, from perspective of denial of service, and also some more complex attacks throughout the presentation. This is what I just said. All right, the internet is divided into writing policy domains called autonomous systems. What I mean by autonomous system is a group of writers that share the same writing policy. They're under a single administrative domain, usually a company, a single administrator or a team of administrators, so that anything that comes in or out of the network is obviously under the control of a single point of accountability. These are political and topographical regions of the internet. Most organizations only have one. There are large backbone providers that have many of them. That's actually where I've got most of my experience with BGP, is dealing with BGP through multiple autonomous systems. What I mean by political and topographical regions is that the internet, of course, is not a geographically divided system. The nation states or the administrative domains that we see geographically are now corporations. When you travel or send packets across the internet, you're traversing separate corporate territories. And under these corporate territories, you're subject to the laws or the service level agreements and also the acceptable use policies of these organizations. So the autonomous system is not only something that's used in BGP, but it also represents a very interesting political or geographical concept. Okay, and of course, many internet providers charge their customers based upon the amount of bandwidth they use over a set period. How many people, just a show of hands, how many of you are using BGP in your network? Wow, this is a great deal of you, great. Okay, how many of you have written documentation or are familiar with security issues with on BGP, if you dealt with it extensively? Okay, we've got one. Have any of you written any books or RFCs, or is there Bassem Halabi or anyone in the audience here that's actually developed a standard for BGP, just in case, I want to see. Okay, it's all good. Okay, to facilitate this, the ISP must have some mechanism for maintaining a reasonable quality of service. Some of you may know that are connected to UUNET, they have this 100% service level guarantee. That's not an advertisement, it's just the only one I'm familiar with. So what happens is that what they're doing, and I'd imagine other organizations will be doing, is having quality of service directly affect their bottom line. If they cannot deliver, they will actually, you know, refund money. Now what happens is when you start guaranteeing this, all of a sudden your network, or the quality of your network, it's not sort of an abstract connection between, you know, getting a little bit of packet loss or having a little bit of downtime. All of a sudden, you know, if you have a customer that's down for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, you know, you have to refund them, and that's the way that I think that that's going to be a trend that happens or expands a great deal throughout the industry. Okay, ISPs use Border Gateway Protocol. This is the definition of the acronym, to route and optimize traffic flow in their networks. The thing with BGP is that it was developed for multi-home networks, and it's also sort of the top level divisor, or it's a protocol that interacts with top level divisors called autonomous systems across the net. And of course, quality of flow directly affects the quality of service that the customers receive, as I just explained. Okay, this is really important. To manipulate the flow of traffic in and out of an ISP's network is to have complete control of the quality of service it can offer to its customers. So control of routing information, and I'd like to stress this, control of routing information effectively gives you control over the amount of money coming into your company, and also affects adjacent networks around the target network. All right. I've assembled a few factoids for an introduction. The Border Gateway Protocol is defined in RFC 1771. There's actually a number of RFCs defining BGP, not defining, but involving BGP, also talking about authentication. 1771 is where it's actually defined, and where you'll find a lot of the content was gotten for this presentation. It uses TCP for transport, unlike, say, RIP, which uses UDP, so it's stateful, and it uses port 179, so it's an application layer protocol also. All right, it uses four kinds of messages during the session, so it's a relatively simple protocol in that sense. We have open, update, notification, and keep alive messages. Should I pull the mic in? Okay. Okay, the open message, it contains a version number. We're using BGP version 4 just because that's actually the most commonly used version on the internet. I'm sure deep within inside MILNET and some other legacy networks maybe earlier versions are used. But as far as the ISP world is concerned, BGP 4 is definitive. The autonomous system number of the originator of the session is contained with it. A hold time, which is a maximum time interval between keep alive, update, and notification messages, which will be explained in a moment. The BGP identifier, which is actually just the IP address of the source of the announcement. And I'm going to skip over this slide a little bit. And the important thing is that it carries authentication information. Now, what I actually missed in these slides is that there's a BGP message header that handles all of the authentication information, so it is not restricted solely to the open message. Okay, this is really the guts of the protocol. It carries routes and the information about them, particularly attributes, which are used to make decisions on whether a route is preferred or not. These are, as you can see, unfeasible routes length, withdrawn routes, total path attributes length, path attributes, and network layer reachability information. Okay, this information is the most relevant to our discussion, as path attributes are really what causes a peer to make a decision about a route. I'm going to get into the attribute shortly. People have messages. These are interesting because the protocol itself periodically sends out an empty BGP message to its peer just to say that I'm still here, I'm alive, the session is operable. It's actually an empty BGP message. There's no information contained within it, and they're sent. If they're not sent for the period of a predefined hold timer, which I'll get into, the session will time out, and you'll see what's called a route flap, and I'll also get into that shortly. Okay, the attributes. We have origin, AS path, local preference, atomic aggregator, aggregator, next hop, and multi-exit discriminator. Now, I'm going to go through each of these and there will be little definitions of them. I will also explain aggregation because it's something very important that isn't done nearly enough on the internet. If any of you are on NANOG, I think that you probably know it pretty well, and those of you that are not on NANOG will probably find this information useful. Okay, the origin attribute communicates information about whether the route was learned from an autonomous system's IGP, which is, of course, its internal gateway protocol, or from a peer. It will contain all relevant information about the source of the announcement. Now, with that, what I mean by the IGP is whether a route was learned from RIP, OSPF. Those are the two main ones, IGRP or any other more obscure protocol. Local preference is actually a big one, especially when we get into talking about communities. Local preference allows BGP speaker to assign preference to routes learned from a particular peer. This information is not propagated outside the AS to external peers. So local preference, it's called local preference just because, well, I'm not going to say just because it's local. Because the decision is made locally and yeah, of course, not to external peers. Sorry, I'm losing myself here. Okay, AS path is a list of autonomous systems numbers that define the path to the origin of a route. These are known as AS hops. This information is the first attribute examined when deciding a metric or distance to a destination to decide the preference for the route. So if you think of it in the context of RIP, if you're familiar with it, RIP actually will check to see check the number of hops between its source and destination or wherever the packet is going or how to evaluate the route. In this case, as opposed to using hops, it uses AS hops, which is the number of autonomous systems between the originator of the route and the peer that has received it. Okay, atomic aggregator is used if a BGP speaker has a preference set for a less specific route. The information must also be announced to all peers the route is announced to. Is that two? Aggregator, here we go. An aggregator specifies that a route being announced has been aggregated or may not be completely routed by the origin autonomous system. This allows BGP speakers to summarize routes and not clutter global tables with longer prefixes. I'm going to do a brief comment about aggregation. If you have, let's say you have a slash 18, and you are not using all of that slash 18, you've actually divided it across your network in multiple subnets, but are still not using all of it, as opposed to cluttering the table and making multiple announcements for, say, a whole series of class Cs or a couple of slash 21s, you can announce all of the routes or all of the address space as the slash 18, which means that you cut down on the number of routes that you're announcing. This not only keeps internet routing tables from being cluttered, but it also limits the amount of information that's available to your peers about what the internal structure of your network is and how you've segmented your address space. Okay, next hop. This is included in all update messages, and it carries the IP address of the originator of the announcement. If you get a route, it says, this is where I got it from. That's it. Multi-exit discriminator, I'm not going to be talking about this much, but it advises adjacent BGP speakers that the originator of a route has multiple adjacencies to a destination AS. So it will say that it has the route, but it has multiple ways of getting there. Okay, the decision process. This is the important part, really. Next hop information is checked to see if it's reachable, because it says, I'm going to send the route to this next hop and it's not available, it's obviously going to drop the route. Local preference is checked to see if it's higher than see if it's higher than similar routes from other sources. This is something that's defined, again, by the local administrator. If you are multi-homed, you can decide that you will accept some routes, particularly internet routes, from one of your peers and prefer paths to those routes as opposed to another. And this is assigned by communities, which we'll get into in a moment. Okay, it will check to see if the route is originated locally within the receiving router, or it will choose the route with the shortest AS path length. Very much like RIP, it will find the shortest path to the route. But of course, this is a number of AS hops as opposed to a number of physical hops. Okay, it will check the origin of the route. It will check for whether it was originated internally from a direct peer, so if it was an internal route from one of your peers. If it actually got the route from, if your peer got it from an external peer, which would be EGP, or incomplete, which is unknown, and their precedence is set respectively. It will also compare multi-exit discriminator information for the lowest value, which will give confederation information. BGP is actually a massive topic, something that you can't really cover in an hour. There's a number of very good books written on it, which are in the appendix. So I will not get into confederations and confederation security. Okay, it compares IGP information to see which path is shortest to the next hop. If the route was originated locally, it will take information from, say, either RIP or OSPF and use that if all other information is the same. And if worse comes to worse, it uses the BGP router ID, which is implementation specific. Cisco, of course, uses the lowest IP address of the loopback address of the peers. So if you have two peers, whoever has the lower address space, it will prefer that, and that's really a last resort. Okay, communities. These are defined locally within the autonomous system and correspond to the assignment of attributes to routes being announced to them by their peers. This is also the case for AS's wanting to shape traffic coming into their network from their peers. These are actually hammered out in any peering agreement. I'm sure if any of you are doing BGP with your customers, you may allow them to use communities. For those of you that aren't or are just getting into BGP, I'm going to explain a little bit about what they are. A network provider may be allowed to announce routes to a peer using communities provided to them as a part of the peering agreement. Most network service providers have communities that are used internally and those that they allow external peers to use. So if you, let's say you are running BGP internally, there's something I glossed over. There are actually three types of BGP. There's internal BGP, which is IBGP, external BGP, which is EBGP, and EBGP multi-hop, where you are establishing a peering session between two peers that is not over the same physical wire. So if you have an intermediate hop between them, you would use multi-hop. This is actually good for using, you can't really do load balancing, but you can do load sharing and also for redundancy. Now, what's important here is if a route is announced with the correct community, the recipient peer will alter its attributes that it assigns to the routes. So however your communities are set, I think that describes itself, but I put it in bold and I'd like to reiterate that any community that you set, and if your peer uses that community, your router will say, okay, I trust you because you have given me this piece of information that will allow me to make this decision and prefer your route. Okay, catastrophic misconfiguration, that's what this is mostly about. BGP itself is actually a pretty robust protocol. The real problem that I found is the way that it's been implemented by a lot of administrators. The most well-known example of damage is caused by a misconfigured BGP peer. It can be described as follows. I don't know if, again, any of you on Nanog have probably seen this. Routes from AS40 are transited by AS10 and AS20. There's a diagram to follow. AS10 accepts anything it hears from AS40, which means it's doing AS path-based filtering, which I'll get into, and does not use access lists to receive routes. Both AS10 and AS20 send full internet BGP tables to AS40. You can see from the diagram. So it's a simple peering session, but one of the big issues here is that they figure that if it comes from AS10 or AS20, that it's true, and they can send absolutely anything they want. this is a little more trust than anyone should really have in developing a peering agreement. Okay, AS40 announces its internal routes, which are redistributed from IBGP, because they're doing, sorry. AS40, see, a good metaphor for BGP is actually circles with lines drawn between them. But regardless, AS40 uses IBGP internally, so if you can imagine a number of hosts internally there exchanging BGP information. And of course, the problem is when AS40 redistributes its full internet routing table into its IBGP tables. So again, back to the diagram. We have AS40 getting full internet tables from both sides. And what they also announce back are just simply their routes. Let's say they have a /16. Problem arises, of course, when the full tables from AS20 and AS10 get internal or are internalized or redistributed into the internal BGP session of AS40, which of course sends that back out into its external BGP, which you'll see from the next slide. The internet routing table is then redistributed from internal BGP, and the other thing is that it changes its origin. Once you have redistributed it into your internal BGP session or inside your AS, when you announce it back out again, it will no longer be flagged or have an origin of originating from an external peer. All of a sudden, these internet tables that you got from your peers are originating from your network. As you can see from this diagram here. So AS40 has decided to announce the full internet tables from AS20 over to AS10, saying that I didn't get them from AS20, in fact, I originated them from inside my network. Also the same between AS40 and AS20. AS40 is effectively announcing that the entire internet originates from within their network. Some of you may have seen this occasionally where all trace routes to anywhere end up at a particular network, and this goes on for about an hour or so, and then again if you check a few mailing lists you'll find out that someone has actually done what's called mutual redistribution, where they of course have decided to announce the entire internet as originating from their autonomous system. Yes, we can laugh now, but for those of you that could, I think the ones that aren't laughing are the ones that have been directly affected by it. Okay, the result is that all internet-bound traffic from neighboring ASs will saturate AS40's network and make the internet inaccessible to any peer AS that is listening to the announcement. Now, this, I'm going to flip back a little bit to this diagram. Ah, that one will do. This means that if the announcement, let's say, from AS10 propagates to AS30 and any other peers, depending on however they're filtering their routes, that means that the internet is effectively inaccessible to anyone that this route propagates to. Let's say there was a number of other circles and lines going off to the left or your right. That means that they would effectively believe that the internet originated from AS40. I mentioned this is why AS path-based filtering is bad. I glossed over that. I'll mention it again. AS path-based filtering is when you trust that any route coming into your network is correct solely because it originates from a particular peer or a list of peers. AS10 is configured with the following errors. There's actually an illegible slide at the very end of the presentation with a very small font with a mock-up Cisco config. If you can read it, well, cool. Otherwise, I will leave it up here after the presentation, and you can compare the two of them and see if you can decipher what I've actually written. So AS path-based filtering for all peers and accepting all routes indiscriminately. It does not configure filtering for RFC 1918 addresses or other AS's net blocks. And it has IGP synchronization turned off. IGP synchronization, this is something that I've seen a lot with ISPs, particularly for performance issues. What it is when BGP decides that a route that was originated internally when it looks at that route, it tries to decide whether the route is still valid. So it will check with your internal gateway protocol to find out whether that route is still valid. So you're synchronizing your internal routes with your external routes. This is turned off because every time it looks for an internal route, it has to look it up, you know, with Ripper OSPF in those tables, and it, some people have experienced a performance hit with this. Now, with the reason I think that people should use synchronization is A, it's mentioned in the RFC that you have to, and B, that if a route happens to leak from your IGP, let's say an RFC 1918 address block, if that happens to leak into BGP from your IGP, BGP doesn't care. It's not going to look. It's not going to find out whether RIP has withdrawn it. It will not find out whether the route is looped. It really doesn't care. So what happens is that all of a sudden you have this rogue or leaked route in your BGP table, and it takes a little while to track down, and it has to be manually cleared from the router, is that the routing protocols won't look at it and say this is bad. So it's an administrative hassle, and if it happens to be someone's route and is causing them to be disconnected from the rest of the net, it can really affect your quality of service. Okay, an unspecific single route map that allows all peers to announce routes with all communities to them. The obscurity of the communities is the only thing preventing a peer from using them. Okay, what I have seen is a configuration, and you'll notice in my obfuscated config in the back, that as opposed to putting together route maps on a peer-by-peer basis, all communities will be defined within a single map. This means that if you have assigned a particular community to one peer, and you also have your internal communities within the same route map, if you have a customer if you have a customer that is a mutual customer of yours and another customer, one of them may be able to use your internal communities to get a higher preference for their route to their network. This is essentially sucking traffic from your network to theirs. Okay, there's another issue with redistribution. AS10 redistributes their IGP directly into BGP without filtering. IGPs tend to be fairly volatile. Any of you with dial-up connectivity or a network that changes a lot, particularly dial-up is the one I'd like to focus on. you'll find that there will be a great deal of updates going to your BGP session. The alternative to this, as opposed to taking your internal protocol, is to statically define all of the routes that you're going to be using. This is also where aggregation comes in and summarizing your routes. Let's say you have 10 class Cs spread over your network, and as opposed to announcing those 10 class Cs to your peers individually, you can summarize them as, sorry, I can't do CID or my head that fast. As opposed to announcing them as 10 separate net blocks. Can anyone do it in their head really fast? Anyone? Okay, I didn't think so. I don't feel so bad. You can summarize them to a single route. This means that that you are not trusting your internal protocol for getting definitive information that you'll be announcing to your peers. The other flaw with AS10 is that it does not aggregate the routes. Okay, again, looking at the config, those of you familiar with Cisco configurations, it is actually impossible that a single peer may simultaneously have all of these errors. Some of them cancel out each other. But many providers, either for necessity or ignorance, have at least one of them. Okay, aggressive routing. This is something I've actually received a lot of questions about, particularly from the proposal. It seems somewhat far-fetched, and I've seen it a couple of times, and that's why I thought I'd bring it up. AS10 has a customer, AS40. I should have actually had a diagram there. Who's multi-homed with a T3 to AS20 and a T3 to AS10. I mentioned T3 just so that they have an equal capacity link to each other. AS10 assigns a local preference of 100 to all customer routes, and assigns a local preference of 120 to routes learned from its internal BGP peers. local preference, actually, just to mention, the higher the local preference, the more preference it will be given, as opposed to other protocols where lower numbers will give you a higher preference. All right, both AS10 and AS20 charge customer AS40 using traffic statistics. So however many megabytes per month they use, they're charged for it. Now the trouble arises, there's actually going to be a diagram. The trouble arises when AS20 announces all of the routes to AS10 with the community 10.120, which means AS20 is saying, all right, we want a local preference of 120 assigned to any routes that we announce to you. So 253.1.0.0/16 with an origin of AS40 is announced from AS40 to AS10 and also AS20 respectively. This is another diagram. So as you can see, that route is being announced to both peers. Okay, so AS10 assigns a local preference of 100 to this route and announces it to its peers as 253.1.0.0/16 with an AS path of AS40 and then AS10. AS20 also assigns a local preference of 100 to the route and announces it back to AS10 as 253.1.0.0/16 with an AS path of AS40, AS20, and the community of 120. Now you'll notice that the AS paths here are equal. This is actually illustrating the part of the BGP decision process where you would think that hop count would be the definitive source to decide on whether you would pick a particular route, but local preference will in fact change this. Okay, so we have the route being announced to AS10 and AS20. And of course, AS20 is re-announcing that back to AS10 with a community that where AS10 will prefer the route from AS20 instead of the one from AS40, even though their AS path lengths are the same. I'll go through this quickly. And AS10 assigns a local preference of 100 to this route, announces it to its peers with the AS path of AS40 and AS10. AS20 also assigns a local preference of 100 to this. And regardless, because AS20 knows AS10's communities, they have AS10 is sending all traffic to the customer network and is being received by AS20, who, because of its local preference, is seeing a great deal of traffic heading down the customer link to AS40. So as you can see from the diagram, because AS10, even though they have the same AS path length, AS20 has discovered the communities that AS10 uses and figured out a way for AS10 to prefer its routes and is thus sending traffic back to AS40 via AS20. So what's happened is that AS20 has, in effect, stolen traffic from AS10 to its customer network. Now, again, in the situation where they're charging on a per megabyte basis, AS20, you know, will be making a little bit of money on this, and AS40 will also see one of their links very saturated. Now, I have actually seen this done in practice in real life. I was very surprised. I thought it was actually ignorance on the part of one of the participants. In this case, it would have been whoever was representing AS20, but the thing is, after asking them to fix it, it actually reoccurred a couple of times. So depending on the amount of traffic on the link, this will either saturate the link, causing a denial of service, and affect the traffic statistics on the customer interface. And as I mentioned, this has been observed and unattended for periods of time exceeding a month. This has been observed in the wild. Okay, propagation of spoofed RFC 1918 addresses. Now, most of you, I hope, are using access list to filter routes from your peers. You should not be accepting any announcements of RFC 1918 addresses. As mentioned, the RFC, and also just common sense. The best way, of course, not to let these into your network is by filtering them wherever you're receiving your routes from. So AS20 has a dedicated customer who's using a packet filter on the border of their network using a 10/8 block. And the Internet Visible Gateway is 253.1.2.1. Now, I'm using 253.1 just because it was the only NEP block counting down. It was the first NEP block counting down from 255 that wasn't assigned. And so I didn't want to use anyone's address space and suggest that they may be the perpetrators of these sort of things. The 10/A route should be invisible to the rest of the Internet. So AS40, as you can see from your diagram, has an evil user that connects via dial-up. AS40 also redistributes their IGP, in this case RIP, directly into BGP. So that means that even if they're using authentication within BGP, they are getting definitive writing information from RIP. I don't know how many of you actually do that, or I think you might be concerned. Okay, the evil user connects to an ISDN port in the dial pool. And using RouteD or a simple Perl script, I don't know if any of you have used RAW IP Perl, but it's really cool, and broadcast 10/16 with a source of 253.1.2.1 to the terminal server. Now, that gateway is actually the gateway of its target network. So all of a sudden, the autonomous system, or the routers within the autonomous system, have a route for this 10/8 address, which it originally was internal to this customer's network, but now anyone within that autonomous system, however many hundreds of thousands of hosts, can actually just send packets directly to points on that 10/16 address. So this terminal server sends this information to the core router, which accommodatingly redistributes it to AS10, which in turn propagates the announcement to the target AS20. Now, remember from my previous description of the network, they're using ASPath-based filtering, which means they are trusting any information, writing information that is passed between them, and are not filtering for specific networks. So all of a sudden, the origin. This 10/16 NEP block has not only flooded the original AS, but has also crossed over into the next one. So we actually have a very large internet, or some area on the internet, that is routing this private address space. So the route is propagated along the AS path to her target, and she may now launch her scans from a safe distance outside the immediate administrative domain of her prey. So because this route was able to be propagated into another AS, internally, if the route showed up within her own AS, the administrative staff would be on it really quickly. You know, it would disappear, and she wouldn't be able to send packets to it. But because it's going to another that involves contacting the administrators of the network she's on to have the route removed. This is just a time-stalling technique on her part. Okay, this evil user may also send a RIP update saying that she has 10.128/16, which effectively puts her within the 10/8 address space. So all of a sudden we have 10/8 routed between two autonomous systems, and this user has half of it. So she has addresses on her machine and doesn't even have to bother forging packets. I mean, she is legitimately, for all intents and purposes, the owner of this 10.128/16. Okay, the core router does not synchronize and thus does not check the reachability information for the route it learned from RIP. As I mentioned earlier with RED synchronization, this route has actually moved from RIP into BGP. BGP is not checking with RIP to see whether this route has been withdrawn or not. So it's just sitting in the BGP table, and there's no updates or withdrawals, and it's going to sit there until someone removes it. The stray route will have to be manually cleared from the router, as it will not receive another update from RIP, nor will it bother checking the status of the route within IGP due to the lack of synchronization in the session. Okay, depending on the configuration of the packet filter on the target network, this was the 253.1 gateway, and I'm going to say most are misconfigured, because as you've seen from the other presentations you've been to, most packet filters and firewalls and intrusion detection systems and any security measures, for that matter, are horribly misconfigured. Ms. Evil is free to scan, connect, and otherwise abuse hosts behind the packet filter without having to use IP spoofing or any other methods that have limited success against current IP stack implementations. So what this does is once you you have inserted a route into BGP, there's no other authentication beyond that. That's it. You are the legitimate owner of that route until some administrator somewhere says, what the hell are you doing? In many cases, it takes a while for that to happen. And in fact, that period of time is often enough to compromise a network and simplify the process greatly by not having to actually abuse anything in the IP stack to do so. Okay, black holes and wormholes. The most well-known application of purposeful black holing is Paul Bixby's Maps RBL, which announced offending netblocks to subscribers via eBGP multi-hop, where the offending route's next hop information would be changed to an address that would simply drop packets. Now, there, I'm not sure whether there's... it'd be interesting to see the split between people that are subscribers to Maps RBL and those that have been a victim of Maps RBL. So those of you that have been victims, my apologies, and I guess you're very aware of how effective this is as far as dropping traffic and denying service to an offending network. Okay, the difference between a black hole and a wormhole is that a wormhole has a host that the black hole route, a wormhole is simply a black hole where you have the route assigned to an interface. I'd like to get into the Paul Bixby changing the next hop information. What happens is, as opposed to routing them, simply announcing a route when you're blackholing a route, sorry, I'm falling over myself here. Blackholing a route involves announcing a route that you don't actually have. In this case, you're accepting routes from a source, which is a route server that Bixby put together, and what you do is you change the next hop information to an interface that will not answer. As opposed to re-announcing it to your peers, you simply take it, change the next hop information, and it goes to the bitbucket. Okay, of course, blackholing your route involves announcing to your peers that you have a route to a network that you in fact do not. All peers that are listening to your announcement will send traffic destined to the offending network to your router, which will promptly send the packets careening into the bitbucket. I think some of you may have experienced someone else announcing your route when they don't have it. The most common symptoms of this are a sudden drop in traffic coming into your network, and then checking route servers and route reflectors and route looking glasses to notice that someone else is in fact announcing the routes that you have, or announcing your routes. This method has proved extremely effective in cutting down the amount of spam on the internet by shunning routes to providers that could not keep their users in check. Now, legitimate blackholing can be accomplished by establishing multi-hop BGP session with the source of the black hole networks and maintaining an access list of the routes that you wish to accept from the black hole peer. It's probably the most effective denial of service attack thus far conceived on the internet, and I've mentioned here, and I had to add it, it may more effectively be named a denial of existence attack. Because, I mean, again, if your route is not out there, it's not an issue of just, you know, smurfing a box and it can't respond. All of a sudden, the network that you're on is just not there. Like, poof. Like, I can't emphasize that enough. Just poof. Okay, a wormhole. There is no legitimate use for this, but it's really cool. Creating a wormhole involves finding a route to a target network and attempting to propagate an announcement that it in fact terminates on your own network, where a host with the wormhole networks is being configured to respond to services that the target would ordinarily be providing. I've called this a wormhole because the very fabric of the internet is being altered to create a direct path to another destination. Simply put, someone you don't like, find out what their route is and announce it to everyone. But the difference is, you can announce it to everyone, they will send traffic to your network, and all you have to do is assign that that route to a machine on your network where you can sniff the traffic going into it. You can throw up a fake web page if you wanted to, you can put up an FTP archive. You could actually, if you really felt like it, you could have an entire network that would respond to the services and absorb all of their mail and all their incoming authentication. You are effectively becoming a doppelganger of this other network. Okay, this can most easily be accomplished using misconfigured IGP redistribution mentioned in a previous attack, as I mentioned with RIP, if you don't like someone and your internet provider is not filtering information from their IBGP, their IGP into their EGP, you can decide that you can send that information via RIP, which will be redistributed into BGP and re-announce out and become that network you're not too happy with. Most hijacking of networks thus far has been done with DNS and in small volatile routing domains using RIP. This has not been seen in the wild yet. And I mention that just because after this, I've shown that it is a relatively simple attack if you know what you're looking for. Okay, using IP spoofing to forge update messages. Okay, due to the fact that most BGP sessions are established over the same physical wire, forging the opening of a session would be exceedingly difficult, if not impossible, as it would be necessary to disable responses from the spoofed interface, which must be traversed by the spoofed packet. What you run the risk of if you start trying to deny responses from one of the peers is that they will start flapping. The routes that are being announced between them may become dampened, and you will actually not be able to traverse the path to the host that you would like to establish a phony BGP session with. The only feasible open attack would be against a multi-hop session between two hosts with IP stacks that use predictable TCP sequence numbers and whose BGP implementation does not support authentication. I'm going to get into the authentication issue in a moment. Even with multi-hop, again, you're talking about forging an entire BGP session where they're going to be expecting the full routing tables. And again, if you do mess it up and cause a denial of service attack, all the routes will be dampened and you actually will not be able to access the host you're attempting to spoof a connection to. So due to the robustness or volatility of the protocol, in that respect, it's not really a feasible attack. Okay, this leaves the possibility of inserting forged update messages into an existing session. An interesting feature of BGP is that the update and keep alive packets are not required to contain a sequence number other than that of the TCP sequence number in the TCP header. So all sequencing is done by TCP. BGP itself just dumps the information down the wire and writing up to eights down the wire, not checking to see whether there's any order, rhyme, or reason that route is coming across the session. Okay, authentication is in fact not only done at the beginning of the protocol. That is an incorrect statement. It's actually handled in the BGP message header, which I missed at the beginning and mentioned that. Sorry about that. Update and keep alive messages must be transmitted at an interval less than a pre-configured hold timer, which is recommended to be greater than 2 seconds. This leaves at least a 2-second window for the insertion of any information an attacker wishes into the TCP stream. Again, I have not been able to reproduce this. It is feasible, again, if you're doing it against an IP stack where you can in fact insert, you can hijack the TCP session. But that's what it comes down to, is hijacking the TCP session. It's not an issue of dealing with any other BGP information or authentication or sequencing. It really comes down to its reliance on TCP. Okay, I had to add this. Using IP spoofing against modern versions of Cisco's iOS, it's not effective and thus will not be vulnerable directly to the spoofing of update messages. Okay, Cisco's iOS allows for the use of MD5 for authentication of peers. iOS also has very random TCP ISNs, and it would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, to insert a forged update message into a BGP session between two Cisco routers. Information about how this authentication is done was not available to the author due to its proprietary nature. I actually hunted around a fair bit and could not find any documentation on exactly how it is done. The documentation I've read says that, yes, we use MD5 authentication, but the details of that are beyond the scope of this document, consistently. So if anyone wants to do any further research or Cisco would like to divulge that, that would be really spiffy. Okay, Merit's free version of GateD goes through the motions of authentication, but does not currently seem to have any strong authentication available. Now, this is the free version. After going through the source, looking for the authentication routine, it was observed that gate D only looks for a string of all ones in the authentication field of the BGP message header, not the open header. A string of all ones signifies to the BGP speaker that no authentication mechanism is present. This is really done for interoperability. I was very surprised to find this. In fact, I did a lot of combing through the source to find this particular problem, and of course looked at the manual, and there's an option called no auth check, and it's right there in front of me in the documentation, so I didn't really have to go through the source, as mentioned here. See, there are a number of vendors use GateD in their products. They're members of the GateD consortium, and they have access to more current revisions of the software. Again, I don't have access to the GateD consortium's current version of it, so I'm actually not aware of whether they support interoperable authentication in the commercial version of GateD. Does anyone have confirmation? I'm sure there's got to be someone in here. Can someone confirm or deny whether the GateD consortium's version of GateD supports it? Yell. Okay, well, it's interesting. Now we have a piece of further research to do. Okay, recommendations. All right, it's a robust protocol whose authentication mechanism is not widely implemented or used. This is something I found in working for a large ISP with multiple ISs. There was never any concern that anyone would ever try to forge update messages and insert them into streams, so they never actually bothered using BGP authentication. There is one large provider that in the last 8 months or so has done it, and I think that may set a trend in using it further. I'm not going to name names because I've seen what happens when people name names around here. let's see. Okay. Yeah, just as a note, it's possible to arbitrarily alter paths on the internet. The proper precautions are not taken in the configuration of routers. As you've seen, BGP being the definitive source of routing information on the net, anyone that has control over a border router effectively has control of not only the owner, the AS that router belongs to, but all peers that are listening to that information. And we're talking about a massive amount of influence here. I think the it's been likened to bigger than God. Okay, BGP routing tables are a definitive source of information, yada, 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 yada. Okay, it is possible to insert false information into peering sessions either by abusing misconfigured routers or actively inserting information into the peering session. This is really a summary of the presentation and a few conclusions. The consequences of a misconfigured or abused network can affect the global internet. As we've seen, particularly with mutual redistribution, if you have a very large provider that spans the globe and all of a sudden they start announcing routes from the external internet as originating locally, if they have enough peers, it will cut off massive amounts of the internet. We've seen this happen. Again, I'm not going to name names, but those of you involved in the NANOG list or have ever been affected by it, you know who I'm talking about. So. Okay, well, yeah, and probably the solution to most of this actually is filtering your network. It's not using AS path-based filtering. It's when you're hammering out your peering agreements, be very specific about the routes that you will listen to them. Have an established process for having routes added to your access list and what you will listen to them, or what you will listen to from your customers. If you blindly accept any information that they do send to you, it's only a matter of time before their internal routes leak into your tables or someone actively abuses it and starts causing trouble. Okay, and as for recommendations, some of these are pretty straightforward. All sites should filter RFC 1918 net blocks. Now, I know that's kind of funny that I should be mentioning it, but again, you'd be surprised how many people don't do it, so I'm just going to beat you over the head with it one more time. All sites that have implementation that support authentication should use it. I think beginning with this presentation, and also I've heard some other sort of grumblings in the underground, that this will be a future area of research for a lot of hackers, and because it really is, the amount of power that BGP can allow someone to have, I think it's going to become a target and an area of research for some less savory folk, and so I think authentication is definitely necessary. Okay, IGP routes should be static if they're to be inserted into BGP. iOS actually has the network command. What I mean by this is please don't redistribute things like WIP into BGP. It's a far too volatile protocol, and inside your network, because of the changes going, or the multiple changes being made, there's no reason why you should have to update your BGP tables every time that happens. You have single net blocks assigned to you, or multiple net blocks that are fairly large, and that's all anyone really needs to know about your network. Because if you announce, say, a slash 16, you may only be using a class C, but if you have a slash 16 allocated to you, it's not going to make a difference. They're still going to send traffic your way, and it'll be up to your router whether to route it internally or not. Okay, again, please do not redistribute RIP into BGP. Just had to add that one more time. Okay, be careful if you absolutely must redistribute BGP routes into your IGP. There are many design alternatives available. Some people will do this for shortest path or to use shortest path routing, particularly with IBGP. Some people, I'm not too familiar with people that have done this, but I've heard about people adding it to OSPF and then filtering it and making sure it doesn't get back out into the internet. This is to do load balancing. It's not load sharing. They actually want balancing across multiple links. There are other design alternatives, particularly using OSPF directly. There's communities. There's getting multiple links. There really isn't much of a reason to dump the entire internet's routing tables into your internal network. Okay, communities directly affect the traffic on your network. Use them sparingly and only when necessary. I mentioned this before. Assign your communities on a peer-by-peer basis. I think with as a principle in computing, computer security and networking, there really is, you can't have generalizations in your configurations. The idea of globally configuring something to be used by multiple users and customers, it's dangerous. So it should really, communities should be added on a case-by-case basis. Let's see. Yes, and do not assume the obscurity of your communities is adequate protection. Okay, access to your core routers gives an excessive amount of power to an attacker, both over your network and over your peers. I don't know if anyone has ever had their router compromised, but not only can they drop your connection to the internet, drop your customer's connection to the internet, they can also send bogus information to your peers and damage their networks too. It's really, there's sort of an interdependent relationship that the internet providers have with each other, and so keeping a clean house will ensure that you're not a liability for your peers. Okay, do not filter solely upon ASPath information. This is more trust than anyone should have in any network. Yes, I'm beating you over the head with this, and this is necessary just because a lot of people will even have their customers just have ASPath filtering. If you're configuring a router for your customers who wants to be multi-home to you and someone else, you're comfortable with your own abilities as far as what you're going to announce to your customers, and they're going to trust you. But if something goes wrong in your network, or someone is able to abuse something within your network, that means that your customer will also be explicitly affected by that, just because that information will be transferred to them via your peering session. And of course, wait with bated breath for IPsec to become more widely implemented. There's an RFC, there's a BGP RFC that deals with securing BGP. I didn't get into it in this presentation, partially due to a recent post of bug track showing problems with it, and also by a follow-up post regarding how that is actually something that shouldn't be bothered with at all, as IPsec is actually on its way real soon now. So again, this is really an introductory overview of BGP. It's a massive topic, and I would like to talk a little bit about future areas of research. Okay, Appendix A, you've got it there. And the configuration, the mock-up configuration as you need it. We're running late on time. I'll go quickly on this. Further areas of research. An implementation by implementation audit of how each BGP message is used would be really nice to see, particularly how notification messages and error handling are done. Someone talking, if looking into security within confederations, something I didn't talk about here, but it's also another massive topic to look into. And also, you know, looking for a more robust way to authenticate BGP peers. I guess I'm out of time. Does anyone want to throw questions at me quickly? Yes?
Is there a publicly available list of who owns what atomic system number?
Yes, you can get that from Aaron. Ooh, all at once? Okay, getting that all at once, no. You can check the RADB. Check out www.ra.net. The RADB, you can actually download the database, and you'd have to search, you'd have to write something and go through it yourself, but they actually do have most information about that. Yes?
Is anybody using the routing authority stuff to actually configure the routers these days?
Yes. Something actually, that was something I thought about talking about, it's just that the only people that I do know that are generating access lists from our ADB information are also using authentication with that, or they maintain a local copy of it. If you look at, see, the RADB is actually an amalgamation of multiple other routing databases. You have CANET, you have, which is Bell. There's the ANS registry, there's the RIPE registry, and anyone that's actually using is using authentication or local copy. Yes?
Using aggressive routing done intentionally?
Sorry?
Using aggressive routing done mostly intentionally or accidentally?
Accidentally, more often than not. The only reason I say that it was done intentionally is because after I had repeatedly spoken to the person about changing it, it came up again, and we had to change our communities to facilitate to stop them from doing that. Yes?
In addition to the RC19 addresses, should I be worried about filtering class D as a route advertisement?
Sorry?
Should I be worried about filtering the class D as a route advertisement?
The class D is in multicast addresses? Oh yeah, sorry, that was something that I should have added. Thank you for pointing that out. Yes, multicast addresses are something to be included when filtering things like RFC 1918 addresses and things you shouldn't be allowing into your network unless you are explicitly using them. Over there? There's someone over there? Someone's pointing? No? There. What? Yeah. Okay, if the session times out, the session is reestablished with a new open message. I mean, if the session does time out after, are you asking about the hold timers or are you talking about the entire opening of a BGP session? The entire opening of a BGP session? An open message is sent. Just a moment, I have to go. I'm going to head back to the top of this. Forget that. Anyway, the opening of BGP session is the open message is sent, authentication information is exchanged, and then update messages are sent with new routes or withdrawn routes back and forth. So when are you talking about when a session drops, what happens? Session drops, it's reestablished, that's it. Unless, of course, there is, unless you have penalties, are you asking about route flapping on top of that? Because if a route disappears multiple times, it will be penalized for disappearing or for being withdrawn. Peers will not accept re-advertisements of that route for a locally defined time. When you're talking about penalizing routes, because they're locally defined, sometimes you will see that a route may be penalized for up to 45 minutes if it flaps multiple times in a short period. I'm sorry I didn't mention that. Further information on that, or okay. Someone yell, I can't see. Yes.
If I create a wormhole,
yep,
for some victim, can I use that as a man-in-the-middle attack and cause the victim not realize that I'm filtering more traffic and sending them some?
It's only a matter of time because, I mean, once you know someone does a trace route or if you're on a slower link, it's only a matter of time before they realize that their traffic is going elsewhere. It's something that would be done for a very short period. Someone yell. Is that it? Yep.
How
most of the backbone is still past the source routing. Is that a thing that facilitates spoofing?
Actually, I wasn't aware that the backbone actually passed source routing. My experience with a lot of backbones is that they actually will not forward them. And no source, in this particular case, I don't believe it would, just because the way that the access lists are configured. Huh, good question. You know what, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. I have to look it up. Thank you. Anyone else? But okay, it's late. Thank you.